This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Don't ask me why I drink. Don't ask me why I drink. Don't ask me why I drink. Reasons worse than you think.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Kate, and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is, and what AA can do to help. Then, we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
I'm John, and I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politic, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, John. So, what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share their experience with alcoholism. So, let's meet our guest. Would you like to introduce yourselves and just give us a quick idea of who you are?
Yes, I'm John, recovering alcoholic. Been sober since April 17th, 1995. 23 years. A builder. Have three children. And grew up in Christchurch. And spent my life here. Yep.
Great. So can you tell us just a wee bit then about how your childhood was growing up here in Christchurch?
My childhood was pretty good, really. Parents were both coasters, so we had lots of card games and parties. And I was a barman by the time I was 10, and it was all good. And it was pretty good. I had a sister that died when I was 9, and that sort of rocked the whole family. And what I've done since I've been sober, is I've actually looked at that and seen how that just devastated all our lives, really. But it's not a reason for drinking. My first drink was with my cousin, who was a coaster, and I was 13 years old, and he came over to stay, and we helped ourselves to Dad's Lion Brown in the games room. Two bottles at a time, one each, and went upstairs and drunk it. And after three, he said, that's enough. Mm-hmm. You know, that they're going to find out. And I said, no. And that ended with me spewing outside and blacking out. And that was my first drink. And my second drink was much the same. As we were later, I was working at the post office. So I was only a kid, 13, 14, Christmas holidays. And I went to the Christmas do. And when I walked out from the Christmas do, because it was all air-conditioned, the fresh air hit me. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and ended up bust off in the middle of the square and just spewed all down the footpath. People who knew me, neighbours and that, saw me. Got kicked off 3 buses on the way home. I spewed on the buses. And they were my first 2 drinks. And I drank like that ever since, really. Yeah.
Right. So, don't know why you'd want to carry on, John, after starting out like that. But, so generally, it sounds like you were, generally drinking with other people, Christmas do's with cousins and things like that. Was that
how
it continued for you?
Yeah. So I got in a lot of trouble at school, and so didn't end up going much. And found pot and loved that, and actually joined YMCA. We were YMCA leaders, and there was a whole group of leaders, and that's where we learnt to drink and smoke pot and party, and they were all good people, and they were my friends as we grew up. And what I know now is when we were 18 and 19, they sort of changed, They went on OEs. They had jobs, they had cars, some of them had girlfriends or partners, and me, I didn't work. I did 8 years of PD, drink driving, and everything that goes with that. Had a 10-month break and did another 2 years. So that was my life. So when I, so that leads me to when I... my last drink, which was Easter Sunday at a Rolling Stones concert in Auckland, and did too much, and had a drug-induced psychosis. I got home to Christchurch, and that was fine on Easter Monday. And I got to the Friday, and I was having morning tea with a bricklayer and his son, who are family friends as well. And I said, oh, geez, I've had a big week, like, I don't know what's going on. And they said, yeah, they knew, they'd been watching me. And I couldn't coordinate a hammer and a nail to put Jib on the wall. And Charlie Brown said to me, got a mate out at Woodend, comes to the pub, plays pool, drinks orange juice, and goes to AA. And I said, well, what's AA? And he said, Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, oh, no, just had a big weekend, you know. And his son played for Canterbury, Canterbury Rugby as well as Country. And they said, oh, what's happened the weekend? And his son was playing Canterbury Saturday and then Country on Sunday. And they said, oh, you used to play a bit of rugby in league. And I looked at them and says, yeah, no, I gave it all up, you know. I gave it all up so I could do PD. You know, started PD when I was 17. And I think there was, you know, it didn't hit me then, but I know that's what I said, and I'd never looked at it like that, you know. And I gave up everything for drinking and drugging. I gave up my family. I didn't see my family for 5 years. My poor mum was devastated and couldn't have me around. Lived in schools, lived with bad people, did bad things, and all just support a habit from day to day. And so as I got older, like, you know, once I'd done a lot of trouble and got to 21, my friends that had been away come home from Auckland and around, and they had a flat. And it was actually, I went to court this day and was meant to go to jail. Didn't go to jail, and some people there supporting me, some of my old friends, not my new ones, and they said, I'll come back home. And I went back there and moved in and stayed and never went back to where I was. So they were all, they had jobs, partners, and I carried on for a couple of years doing what I was doing, hanging out in town, thieving, and. And then I got a partner, got a job, probably got a job first, and a partner, and just tried to fit into the world. Bought a house, always drinking, always, you know, smoked pot. I smoked pot continuously from 17 every day, and a lot of other things when I was younger. And then as I got older, I drank at weekends, you know, like Friday would come and I was just a good Kiwi bloke who'd worked hard and have a drink on a Friday. And so ruined relationships and lost houses, lost jobs, didn't show up, you know, all the stuff that goes with that. And went through three good partners and two houses. And wondered what happened to them after 2.5 years, 3 years. And what I know now, looking back, it was me. I was always a common denominator. They loved me. I was a good guy, a nice guy, and obviously they hoped as I went along I'd mature or grow up or change. I look back now, I had a partner that tried to stop me doing drugs and just drinking, you know, like, I look back now and it was just, she was interfering with my addiction, you know. I didn't know it at the time or anything like that, and there'd be arguments and fights and any excuse just to follow my addiction. So my last partner was great. She didn't mind me doing either. 3 months after meeting with her, she stopped drinking. I found out when I got sober through some good friends of mine that she stopped drinking because of an incident, and she said, when John drinks, someone has to know what's going on. Someone has to be in control. And always wondered why she stopped drinking, you know. She smoked a lot of pot with me, but didn't drink. So we lived in town in Cashel Street, had a house, and I had everything, you know. Like I said, drink at home. I worked, she'd pick me up, I had no license, she'd pick me up from work and go to the Fitzgerald Arms, get a bottle of bourbon on Friday, and go home. And to have a drink. And, looking back, being sober, I've looked back and I've always thought all I ever wanted was just two drinks. You know? And I remember Graham the Bricky was saying one night about how he misses beer, you know, the water running down the outside and the froth. And I thought, fuck, you know what? I didn't even like bourbon. You know, like that first one, I had to chew it down. But once that first one was down, my first sponsor said, the man takes the drink and then the drink takes the man, and that was me. So we lived 2.5 years in Cashel Street, and one day I come out of Fitzgerald Arms, and she was sitting in the car, and she was white as, And I said, well, what's up? She says, oh, you're going to do it again tonight, you know? And I said, do what? She said, you know, you're going to go into town, spend money we haven't got. Because what would happen is I'd go home, have a drink, and then by 10 o'clock the bottle would be empty and I'd get changed. If she was awake, I'd create an argument and I'd go into town. And I had a thing that if I got to Fitzgerald Ave, I wouldn't go back, you know? And I always got to Fitzgerald Ave. And then I'd go into town, Warners, wherever, on my own, loving it. I'd hook up with people, but they weren't... I just liked being on my own. And I'd wander around, end up at the Blues Club, and then the New City, you know? Actually, I'd go visit some friends that were transvestites and then end up at the New City. And then I'd leave the New City when they cleaned it at 7:15 in the morning. So that was 2.5 years. And so this day when I walked out of the car and she said, you're going to do it again, I had no idea. And I was 2 years sober. I was sitting in a meeting and it overwhelmed me with that girl knew what was going to happen when I had a drink. And I had no idea what was going to happen, you know. And yeah, so 2.5 years, I never wanted to go to town. You know, I had everything I wanted at home. I had a nice partner, music, drugs, alcohol, and but the bottle would be empty and I'd go, you know. So, yeah, so that's sort of, you know, like it was a bit backward because I took a lot of drugs and that when I was younger and then sort of grew out of taking hard drugs and stuff and tried to straighten up and it just never worked and... yeah, and so with my last drink, I had a last drink, and then so I said to this bricklayer that I was with, I said, oh, how do you contact AA? And he said, I don't know. And what had happened to me in Auckland, I'd made a pact that if I got home alive, because I thought I was going to die up there, if I got home alive, I'd do something about it. And somehow I rang AA, there was a meeting at lunchtime. I rang my mum, I said, you got to take me to a meeting because there's no licence. She came around, thought she was taking me to the bank to cash a cheque. Ended up at Sally's in town. Peter Woodham. Peter Woodham was on the stairs to meet me. And took me into my first meeting. And they asked me to share after Goldie. And his and my drinking was totally unrelated, but I understood that I was in a safe place. I'd spent the week with my partner and my dad, and I hadn't told them anything that had been going on. And they asked me to share, and I shared for 40 minutes. I was safe. People laughed. It'd been a long time since I'd heard laughter like that. And at the end of my sharing, I turned to Pete, and... I said, so I'm hoping you people can fix me up because I've got to be back at work on Monday. and everyone laughed, and I turned to Pete and I says, I used to be funny, you know, because I hadn't heard that laughter for so long. And from there, they took me to detox. yeah, so they took me to detox. They visited me for a week. They came every day. I wonder what they wanted. And in the end, what they wanted was me to be sober. They didn't want anything from me. They didn't want nothing. They just wanted me to be sober. So I went to Hamner. I was lucky enough to be around when Hamner was around, did the Hamner program, and coming out of there, I got a meditation book that I bought in Hamner 23 years ago. It's got three instructions in the front of it that I wrote. It says, don't pick up a first drink, go to meetings and get a sponsor. And that's all. And that's all I did. I was terrified of drinking. I was terrified of going back to where I was, let alone further down the track. So that's what I did. I went to meetings, got a sponsor, didn't pick up first drink, took anti-abuse for the first 6 months, didn't work for 9 months, 90 meetings, 90 days, just went to meetings. And Peter said to me, he says, hey, it's great, you know, 24 hours is amazing, you know, 7 days, a month, 3 months, they're all amazing achievements. But he said, just give us 2 years. He said, it's a long time when you look forward. He said, but it's a short time when you look back. He said, your whole life will be there waiting for you if you want to walk into it. And I looked at him, I was 27 years old, and I looked at him and I said, Pete, I was 19 yesterday. So I knew what he meant. And after 2 years, I went to the coast with a good mate, Dave, that I was in treatment with, to Roa, and we went up this hill, and we reflected on our 2 years, and life had changed beyond our beyond our wildest dreams. And I had a car, I had a dog, I had a job, I had money on a Monday, you know. Yeah, and then life took off from there, you know. I built houses and got a nice wife and three beautiful children, and you know, I've been through deaths and I've been through all sorts of things. My best mate suicided sober. Yeah, and I stayed sober, and the help of Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, I've just had something happen recently. Recently separated from my wife, and the support and that comes around, it's just been amazing, you know, like it's just held me together. And my home group's Wednesday night men's meeting in Littleton, and there's two meetings there, and it's been great, you know. I've been there and it's been great, but what's happened lately is I've come back to other meetings, and I'm really embarrassed about not participating in AA for the last 10 years, you know, not being part of it, and not going to other meetings and sharing the message and helping, you know, because that's the answer, mate. That's all there is. You just help another alcoholic. If I'm not doing that, I just think about myself, you know. And like my mate Brent says, you know, I don't think much about myself, but it's all I think about. And how's that?
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, John. That was a really amazing story, so thank you. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are 66 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely that there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 6 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesdays at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all of our shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. And remember, if you want to drink, that's your business. But if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.
Don't ask me why I drink. Don't ask me why I drink. Don't ask me why I drink. Reasons worse than you think.